Well, when I gave Walt this scripture reading, he said, how are you going to make this into a Mother's Day sermon? An eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. And I thought, wow. So I'm working on that. It'll happen, but I'm not there yet, so just hold on, wait for it. Welcome to those who are visiting. I know there's a lot of people who come from a long distance, and we appreciate you being with us this morning, and hope that you'll enjoy being with us in our study today. I know some of you have traveled many miles to get here. And we think about people who travel and miles to come and to get places to see us, and we appreciate that. We think about miles a lot, actually. How many feet are there in a mile? Maybe 5,280, if I'm not mistaken. Is that right? And we calculate miles all the time. You know, I get in the car and I want to figure out how many miles per gallon I got this week. And then we'll figure out what the cost of gas is per mile. Or more significantly, maybe than that, we think about miles sometime when we sing songs. We sing the song, When I've Gone the Last Mile of the Way, right? But Jesus talked to us about a mile, too, that I want us to think about this morning. And he talked to us about the second mile. He talked to us about a different kind of mile. And he said in verse 5, chapter 5, verse 41, he said, whosoever shall force you to go 1 mile, go with him 2. Well, I wonder if we could memorize that little verse in the next 25 or 30 minutes this morning. Should be pretty easy. Whoever shall force you to go 1 mile, go with him 2. Kind of an interesting background to that verse. In Jesus' day, Romans sort of ruled that territory, and they had a law that if a soldier came along and you were working in your yard or you were working by your house and he passes by, he could require you, the law said he could require you to take his backpack and carry it 1 mile. I think they may have counted 1,000 paces or something, but that you were under obligation to do that. And if you think about that, you know, I even have found a couple of versions that actually reflect that idea. Look at this. This is the Reach Out, the Living New Testament. Now, we usually kind of frown at those kind of New Testaments, but they try to reflect the idea behind it. If the military demand that you carry their gear for 1 mile, carry it 2. And the Good News for Modern Man said, if one of the occupation troops forces you to carry his pack 1 mile, carry it another 1 mile. I should at least put Mike twice, shouldn't I? The Jews hated the Romans, didn't they? I mean, they hated them. So they would already resent being under their rule, but how much worse would they like a law that said that you had to carry a soldier's backpack for 1 mile? They must have really resented this. Now think for just a minute, if you were sitting there listening to Jesus preach the Sermon on the Mount that day, and you were a Jew, and you may have been amazed at how marvelous his words were and what a great preacher he was and how he said such wonderful things, and you might have commented on how he taught with authority, not like the scribes and the Pharisees. But what would you have thought if you were a Jew and he came to the passage or came to verse 41 and he says to you, if the military demand that you carry their gear for 1 mile, you carry it too? I wonder if he didn't turn their smiles upside down when they heard him say that. I wonder if some of them didn't say, he can't be serious. He must be crazy. It makes me vomit just to even think about being, you know, carrying it 1 mile and he's demanding 2. That's demeaning. That's humiliating. I won't do it. You can imagine there'd be some who would have listened to him that day. That would have been very difficult, very hard to hear that. And it may be a hard thing for us to hear, too. The King James Version, I like this one. It says, and whosoever shall compel thee to go 1 mile, go with him 2. Somebody told a funny story about a Bible study teacher, a Bible class teacher, was teaching little kids, and she was trying to get them to memorize the verse, and one little boy, after a while, raised his hand. He said, I can say it. And he said, and whosoever shall compel thee to go 1 mile, go with him on a train. And maybe that's reflects how hard it is to go that second mile. We'd rather take a train than to go the second mile. But I want us to think about that this morning, just that one verse. Let's think about the idea of going the second mile and how it applies to us and how we're to go beyond what duty demands, that we're supposed to do more than we have to do. And first of all, Jesus was really trying to change people's thinking in this. If you look at chapter 5 and verse 38, direct your attention there just one more time. As we read at the beginning, it says, "You have heard that it was said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth." I mean, the Pharisees, in teaching that, were sort of encouraging retaliation and personal revenge and kind of the even the score mentality. They do this to you, you can get them back for it. On the other hand, Jesus ran to the opposite end of the spectrum. Verse 39, he says, "But I say to you, do not resist him who is evil." Jesus was saying, don't exchange blow for blow. Don't treat your enemies, you know, like you might want to, but treat them better than they deserve. Treat them better than they deserve. And he illustrates that. He gives four illustrations of that. Look again in verse 39 down through verse 42. He says, "Whoever slaps you on your right cheek, turn to him the other also. And if anyone wants to sue you and take your shirt, let him have your coat also. And whoever shall force you to go 1 mile, go with him too. Give him who asks of you, and do not turn away from him who wants to borrow from you." So, what is he saying here? He's kind of saying it's the second mile that does the trick. You know, allowing a man to smite you on the cheek, or letting him have your coat, or submitting to him when he compels you to go 1 mile, does little or no good. It's the other cheek. It's the cloak also. It's the second mile that does the trick. Our tendency is to do just what is required, to do no more than is asked of us. One time Peter said to Jesus, he said, "How many times do I have to forgive someone that sins against me? 7? And he probably thought he was being generous. And Jesus said, 7 times 70. Do you think he was telling Peter that he needed to forgive the person 490 times and that's it? Or do you think he was saying, go the second mile? Go the second mile. Be very forgiving. Be very forgiving. Somebody might have calculated out. I'm sure the Jews, many of them did calculate out how long that mile was and maybe put a peg so they know exactly how far they have to go. Jesus said, go with him too. There probably were some Jews that calculated that out. They may have said, well, that's 10,560 feet. Do you think Jesus was saying, go that far and not a step more? Or do you think he was saying, go the second mile, be gracious, live graciously with people? If I was taught to be anything when I was growing up, it was emphasized a lot to me that you be responsible, you be dependable, you do what is asked, you do your duty. But Jesus says, that's not good enough. That's not good enough. You're going to have to do far more than that. You're going to have to go beyond what the law demands. Now, I think there's some good illustrations in the Bible, probably just lots of illustrations of people who go the second mile, but I just picked three. One is a woman named Rebecca back in Genesis 24. Do you remember her? Rebecca in Genesis chapter 24. Abraham was wanted to find a wife for his son Isaac. And so he commissioned his servant to go back to his homeland and look for a wife. So he goes back and gets back to his homeland and he prays in verse 14. He's wanting the Lord's favor in that. And so he said, may it be, this is a prayer to the Lord, may it be that the girl to whom I say, please let down your jar so that I may drink, and who answers, drink, and I will water your camels also, may she be the one whom thou hast appointed for thy servant Isaac. And by this I shall know that thou hast shown loving kindness to my master." And so he goes out and he waits, and sure enough, somebody comes down the path to where he is and where the well and his camels are, and it's a young lady named Rachel. And verse 16 says she's a beautiful girl. No man had had relations with her. She comes down to the spring, fills her jar up, and she comes up out of the spring. And the servant ran to meet her in verse 17 and said, "Please let me drink a little water from your jar." And she said, "Drink, my lord." And she quickly lowered her jar to her hand and gave him a drink. In verse 19 it says, "And when she had finished giving him a drink, she said, 'I will draw also for your camels until they have finished drinking.'" Now listen quickly to this. Carefully to this. She said, "I will draw also for your camels until they have finished drinking." And so she quickly emptied her jar into the trough and ran back to the well to draw. And she drew for all his camels. And meanwhile, the man was gazing at her in silence to know whether the Lord had made his journey successful or not. So I want you to just look at Rebecca in this case. I read that a camel who's gone a few days without water can drink as much as 25 gallons of water. How many camels did Isaac have, or this servant have with him? How many did he bring? Well, if you go back to verse 10 in that chapter, it says the servant took 10 camels from the camels of his master. I don't know if all of them survived the desert trip, but let's just assume that they did. That he has 10 camels. And those jars that she would have carried would have held, at least from what I read, probably no more than 3 gallons of water. So just imagine this girl, a young girl, and she must have been a blur, quickly hurrying up and down the steps to the spring, back and forth, carrying these jars of water until she gave his camels, until they had finished drinking, and she drew for all his camels. And that's a girl who went the second mile. She really demonstrates that spirit of going the extra mile. So it's Mother's Day. Let's see. How can children go the extra mile to show their mother's appreciation? Well, maybe when the mother asked the daughter to empty the dishwasher, or from the clean dishes, she could load the dishwasher back up with the dirty ones. Maybe when the mother asked the daughter to take the clothes from the dryer washer and put them in the dryer, then she can put another load in the laundry, in the washing machine, you know, without being asked. Or maybe if the mother asks the son to clean the living room up, he can go and clean the green room up too, or the other room in the house. Believe me, of course, my kids do this all the time, so I'm not. But it's the second mile principle. And then maybe in June I'll do this lesson again and do the Father's Day version of it. But you have examples of people who went the second mile. Another example, maybe Ruth in the Bible. Remember her? The book of Ruth. She lived during the period of the Judges. Very dark period. A period when God couldn't hardly find anybody who was righteous among his own people. And this story is of a family by the name, the man's name was Elimelech, and the woman was Naomi, and there was a famine in the land of Israel, and they went to the land of Moab for a while. And as they lived there, the husband of Naomi died, and the daughters of and the sons of Naomi married two Moabite women, Orpha and Ruth. And after about 10 years, her sons died and left her bereaved of her children, bereaved of her father. I mean, this is a woman who had lost everything that was anything to her. And these two daughters are with her. And she hears that God had visited his people again and restored their food, and the famine was over, and she's about to go back home. And her two daughters-in-law begin to accompany her back. And she tries to persuade them not to. And one of them says, as they go along the way, decides, no, okay, I'm going to go back. Orpha does. She may have went the first mile. I wouldn't want to fault her for being a good person. But Ruth, on the other hand, she went the second mile. She left her homeland, where the only place she had ever known. She goes back to a land where probably Moabites would not have been all that welcome. I don't think the Israelites and the Moabites saw eye to eye. They were enemies. She lived among the people there. She took care of her mother-in-law. She committed herself to her mother-in-law. And when she would not hear anything else about it. When Naomi tried to persuade her to go back to her family and marry and find a life there, she said, I will not do that. She said in verse 15, behold, your sister-in-law has gone back to her people and her gods. Return after your sister-in-law. And Ruth said, do not urge me to leave you or turn back from following you. For where you go, I will go. And where you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people and your God, my God. And where you die, I will die. And there I will be buried. Thus may the Lord do to me, and worse, if anything but death parts you and me. So she will dwell with this woman and live there even to the point of where she dies. She intends to care for her mother-in-law, her burial, all the rituals involved, and also be buried alongside of her. So she totally renounces all of her loyalties to her home, and she commits herself to this woman. I think that's a second mile person. Ruth was a person who showed the idea of going the second mile. Let's look at one other example in the New Testament, and that was the Good Samaritan. Look at Luke chapter 10. Luke chapter 10, in verse 30, Jesus was trying to teach a lesson to a lawyer who was resisting what he knew he ought to do by illustrating it with a story, the second commandment, to love your neighbor as yourself. And as he tells this story to the lawyer, he tells a story of a man who was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho. He falls among the robbers. They strip him and beat him and leave him half dead. And two men who should have been the most likely characters to stop and go the second mile to help this man, the priest and the Levite, pass by on the other side, and they go on their way. And the next guy that comes along is a Samaritan. And it says in verse 33, a certain Samaritan who was on a journey came upon him. And when he saw him, he felt compassion. And he came to him and bandaged up his wounds, pouring oil and wine on them. And he put him on his head, on his own beast, and brought him to an inn and took care of him. And the next day he took out 2 denarii and gave them to the innkeeper and said, take care of him. And whatever more you spend when I return, I will repay you. Well, the Samaritans and the Jews didn't get along either very well. This was not a friendly coalition between the Jews and the Samaritans. There was a lot of animosity. So this man who encounters this fellow, this Samaritan who encounters this Jew on the road beat up, he goes far beyond the first mile. I mean, he puts him on his beast. He brings him to an inn. He cares for him for the night. He leaves his money with the innkeeper and says, take care of him and whatever else you need, spend it. And when I come back, I'll reimburse you. No problem. You take care of this man. Give him what he needs, and I'll be back to finish this job. He went the extra mile. He went the second mile. And that's what Jesus is encouraging us to do, is to go the second mile. So, let's talk about some applications to the second mile. Some applications. First of all, I thought in the very most simplest way, we need to go the second mile when we talk about the obedience to the gospel, becoming a follower of Jesus. He tells us we need to believe. We need to believe on the Lord, trust in Him. But we can't, he says also, James said that the demons do that. We're going to have to go beyond just mere belief in Jesus in the sense of mental assessment. We're going to have to obey Him as well. Faith without works is dead if faith is alone. And so we need to go beyond and believe in Jesus and obey Him if we want to be a Christian. Another application is that we need to provide for our families. If we want to talk about something a little more practical in our home life, 1 Timothy chapter 5 and verse 8 says that that we are responsible to care for our families. He says, but if anyone doesn't provide for his own, and especially for those of his household, he has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. So he says, you know, an unbeliever will take care of his family. You're going to have to go beyond that. You're going to have to go way beyond that. And he gives an example, even in verse 10, of someone who did go beyond that, a widow. When he was considering who could be taken care of by the church, he said, he spoke of a widow, and verse 10 says, one who has the reputation for good works, if she's brought up children, if she's shown hospitality to strangers, if she's washed the saints' feet, if she's assisted those in distress, and if she has devoted herself to every good work. Here's someone who not just provided for her family, but she went the second mile. She went beyond that to take care of and help others as well. Another application, back in Matthew chapter 5, you know, people in the community know that they should refrain from crime, and particularly that of murder. But we're going to have to go beyond that. Jesus said in Matthew chapter 5 and verse 21, he said, you've heard it that the ancients said, you shall not commit murder, and whoever commits murder shall be liable to court. He said, I say to you that everyone who is angry with his brother shall be guilty before the court, and whoever shall say to his brother, Raca, shall be guilty before the Supreme Court. He says, it's not enough just to not kill somebody. He says, you need to go beyond that. You need to go the extra mile, the second mile, and learn to even resist being angry, and particularly saying things that would be inappropriate. People in the community know that you shouldn't commit adultery. The Pharisees and scribes even taught that. 5:27 of that same chapter, you've heard it said you shall not commit adultery, but we're going to have to go beyond that, Jesus says. He says, everyone who looks on a woman to lust for her has already committed adultery with her in his heart. We have to go beyond. We have to go the second mile. It's not enough just to not commit adultery. You have to go beyond that. People in the world know that you shouldn't steal. The rich young ruler knew that you shouldn't steal, and he said, I don't steal. Jesus said, commended him for that. But we're going to have to go beyond that. The second mile sort of roots out the covetousness that actually leads to stealing. Jesus said one time, be on guard against every form of greed. Not even when one has an abundance does his life consist of his possessions. The second mile principle. We know from the scriptures that we're to labor, to work with our hands, to labor with all our might. But Jesus said, and the Apostle Paul said in Colossians, we have to go beyond that. We're supposed to work even when the boss isn't looking. Colossians chapter 3, verse 22 and 23. There would have been a lot of master and slave relationships in that day. And some Christians may have been slaves working under pretty harsh masters, and as those masters were present and they were under the watchful eye of their master, they may have worked very hard. But he says, you have to go beyond that. Even when that master goes away and he's not looking, you still need to work with all your might. Chapter 3 and verse 22 says, slaves in all things obey those who are your masters on earth, not with external service as those who merely please men, but with sincerity of heart, fearing the Lord. And whatever you do, do your work heartily as for the Lord, rather than for men. So we don't just work when it's required, but we go beyond it, not just when we're being watched, but even when we're not being watched. People know that they ought not retaliate. We know that. We shouldn't exchange blow for blow and insult for insult. And instead, though, he says that's not enough, just not to do the wrong thing. Sometimes I feel good when I just don't respond. I mean, that's a big step, just to not say anything back when I could. He says, you're going to have to do better than that. You're going to have to respond with a blessing. You're going to bestow a blessing. Look at 1 Peter chapter 3 and verse 8 and 9. He says, to sum up, let all be harmonious, sympathetic, brotherly, kind-hearted, humble in spirit, not returning evil for evil or insult for insult, but giving a blessing instead. You are called for the very purpose that you might inherit a blessing. And then notice back up in chapter 2, notice what happened on the cross. Here's our example of the second mile. Chapter 2, verse 23 and 24. speaking about Jesus when he was on the cross, it says, "And while being reviled, he did not revile in return. While suffering, he uttered no threats, but he kept entrusting himself to him who judges righteously. And he himself bore our sins in his body on the cross, that we might die to sin and live to righteousness. For by his wounds you are healed." So it wasn't that Jesus didn't retaliate. It wasn't enough that he just didn't exchange insult for insult, that he didn't exchange blow for blow. But he gave a blessing. He actually stayed on the cross. He died so that we could live, so that he could heal us. He assumed the wounds that we deserve. And so he, of course, above all others, demonstrated for us the second mile. He kills us with kindness. You know, the Pharisees were very rigorous about law keeping. Probably couldn't fault them too much. They were right to the letter. But Jesus said something about the Pharisees. They would have been the model citizens in their day. But he said about the Pharisees, he says, as he was talking and giving his commandments, he said, "Whoever annuls one of these least commandments and teaches others shall be called the least in the kingdom of heaven. Whoever teaches them and shall be called the greatest in the kingdom of heaven." And verse 20 says, "For I say to you," this is Matthew 5:20, "I say to you that unless your righteousness surpasses that of the scribes and Pharisees, you shall not enter the kingdom of heaven." He said it's not good enough just to do the law. You got to do more than is required. We've got to be better than the Pharisees. Jesus pushes for more than a Pharisee's religion. Do I do just what everybody else does? What is expected? Do I just keep the law, or do I go beyond it? And the one other passage, kind of the sister passage in Luke chapter 6. Luke chapter 6. Luke chapter 6 and verse 35. He says, "But love your enemies." Let's start in verse 32. He says, "And if you love those who love you, what credit is that to you? For even sinners love those who love them." Verse 33, "And if you do good to those who do good to you, what credit is that to you? For even sinners do the same. And if you lend to those from whom you expect to receive, what credit is that to you? Even sinners lend to sinners in order to receive back the same amount. But love your enemies and do good and lend, expecting nothing in return. And your reward will be great, and you'll be the sons of the Most High, for he himself is kind to ungrateful and evil men." Jesus said, we have to go beyond what is required. He said God is good and generous and kind even to ungrateful and evil men. Now, just some concluding observations. There's something special about the second mile. You know, something happens when you go the second mile that you don't experience all the time in the first mile. When people do their duty, when you do only what you're supposed to do, but you know, we're frowning or grumbling or groaning the whole way, kind of like the children of Israel that complained and groaned when they and murmured, you know, every step through the wilderness. You know, when you go the second mile, you go beyond what is required. It's not a matter of duty, but it's a matter of choice. Some people call the second mile the smile mile. It's when it's a choice and not just a duty. The first mile may be doing your duty, but the second mile changes the focus. It's not doing what you have to do, but what you want to do. The mile that changes from the sense of have to want to. The first mile, sometimes people call, is the trial mile. The second mile is sometimes called the character mile. Jewish man who's forced at a spear to carry the bag of that Roman soldier is kind of like a slave. He has no choice. He has to do it. He's forced to. But at the end of that first mile, he says, "Hey, no problem. Listen, if you need me to, I'll carry it another mile for you." Now he's not a slave any longer. Now he's not under obligation. It's not a duty. He makes a determination to carry it along himself. That's when the character really is being developed in a person. I want to just conclude with a story that may be one of the less known stories in the Old Testament. It really comes out of 2 Kings chapter 6. 2 Kings chapter 6. It's one other illustration of a man who went the second mile, or showed the second mile principle in a situation. It's a story about a political military conflict where the Arameans were trying to ambush the Israelites, and a prophet of God named Elisha kept giving away their position to the king of Israel, so the king of Aram couldn't ambush them. And so the king sent a huge army to surround the little town where the prophet and his servant were staying. And when the servant of the prophet got up that morning and came outside, nearly choked to death, he said, because there's this huge army surrounding this little town of Dothan. And so he runs back inside and he says to the prophet, he says, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? And the prophet says, don't worry about it. He said, there's far more of us than there are of them. And he prays and he asks the Lord, he says, open this man's eyes so that he can see. And so the Lord answered his prayer and he opened the man's eyes, and sure enough, it says that the hills were filled with the horses and chariots of fire around them. And then the prophet prays again and he asks the Lord to blind the Arameans, the army that was approaching to attack the prophet and the servant. And so God does that, and he says, and so Elijah and his servant goes down to the Arameans, and he says, who are you looking for? And they say, we're looking for Elisha. And he says, well, come with me and I'll show you where he lives. So they follow his voice, and he leads this army right into the heart of Samaria, the capital city of Israel. And then he prays again, and he says to the Lord, he says, Lord, open their eyes that they might see. And so he lets them see, and they open their eyes, and behold, the armies of Israel and the king of Israel, they're being surrounded by the armies of Israel. And the king of Israel, this is a point that I want you to get, and where it's recorded is down in verse 21. The king of Israel, he sees an opportunity. He says, can I kill him? Can I kill him? And Elisha responds. See, he wanted to do the blow for blow. He wanted to do he wanted to even the score. That was his opportunity. And Elisha responds in verse 22, and he says, you shall not kill them. Would you kill those you have taken with your sword and with your bow? Set bread and water before them, that they may eat and drink and go to their master. And so he prepared a great feast for them. And when they had eaten and drunk, he sent them away, and they went to their master. And the marauding bands of Arameans did not come again into the land of Israel. See, he went the second mile. He extended kindness when every rational person in the city said, destroy these enemies. But he heaped kindness upon them. He gave them grace that they didn't deserve. And the product of that was they went away and they didn't come back again. See, that's the second mile principle. You know, that's the way we need to be to those in the world that we have opportunities to help. Even to those who might hurt us and do us wrong. Even to those who might be disposed to undermine us or insult us or show us disrespect. It's when we go the second mile that we reach a goal of maybe bringing peace and also showing them a way to the Lord. Now for us this morning, the greatest example, of course, of going the second mile is God. Our God is the God of the second mile. He blesses us abundantly. In Ephesians, it says that he lavishes us with his blessings, the blessing of forgiveness. And we're people that don't deserve that blessing, but he's gone the second mile. And when we see Jesus on the cross and people who are laughing at him and spitting at him and mocking at him and all that, mocking him, and his response is, Father, forgive them, for they don't know what they're doing. You're seeing the second mile principle expressed in a way that nobody's ever done it before. How should I respond to that as a Christian? How should I respond to that when I see him on the cross? I need to love and love others with the same mercy and forgiving spirit that he extended to me. I need to be patient and kind and even beyond maybe what is required. How should you respond to him if you aren't a Christian? He's gone the second mile for you already, and he still has blessings ready to pour out. You need to take the first step, the first mile, and believe in him. And then you need to go the second mile, and you need to obey him. Would you do that this morning? Would you come forward and be baptized for the forgiveness of your sins? To go the second mile, begin a walk of doing good to others, walking in the footsteps of Jesus as we stand and sing our song.